Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the country and the airwaves. It's the Breaking It Down podcast hosted by yours truly, Mark Mancini, live in Los Angeles, California, where the temperatures exceeded 100. That's what happens in late June in the dog days of summer. 347-205-9631 will get you on the listening line to hear this show archived. It'll be blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So I'm feeling real giddy today. I'm humbled to interview this great gentleman. As I lay down the red carpet, put the podium in its place, and hand off the mic, Scott Howard Cooper, first of all, how are you?
I am great. I'm excited to be with you.
And let me ask you something. If people want to reach out to you and get a hold of you, how would they get a hold of you?
Well, I'm on Twitter at S. Howard Cooper. I'm on Facebook, Scott Howard Cooper, and Instagram as well, the same address. And love the interaction, love to hear from people.
Well, here we go. You know, you're an author. You came out with Steve Kerr. You know, his book, The Life, you've done the Bruins, the 100 the greatest Bruins of UCLA. You've covered, the NBA, 81 to 2000 at the LA Times, and then 9 years up there in Sacramento and everything. We're going to get into all that, but let me take you through where it first started and how you got into this. Who was your mentor? Who opened the door for you that you said, you know what, I'd like to get into this?
Well, it would be a long list. You're talking to one of the all-time lucky guys, just because the people I've met along the way that sort of helped make everything happen. I was fortunate. I met Chris Baker, who was covering the high schools at the LA Times back in the late 70s and early 80s, and I met him, and there was an opening down in Los Angeles for somebody to just work late nights and do clerk stuff and do gopher stuff. And that's how I got in the door. And I just sort of hung out and until they had to do something with me, I guess, and slowly but surely worked my way up. I owe Chris a great deal of credit. Bill Dwyer was the sports editor who gave me opportunities. Mark Heisler, a lot of people will know that name because he's been around in Philly and in L.A. for so long. He's a Hall of Famer at the Basketball Hall of Fame. Mark is someone I've always looked up to, and I owe him a great deal of credit. He covered the NBA for many of the years when I was doing the Clippers and the Lakers, and I owe him a great deal. But really, it's dozens and dozens of people I stand on their shoulders.
Well, when you look at it, you know, and the great papers of L.A., I can remember, you know, and still the Los Angeles Daily News, the Herald Examiner, and you at the L.A. Times, I mean, that had to be something to, right off the bat. The other papers are just as good, but getting in there with the L.A. Times, how instrumental was that for you?
Well, that was everything. It sort of is reverse order how people probably should do it. There's a real good chance I did it wrong, because to start at the LA Times means you're not going to get a lot of writing opportunities early on. As I said, most of my stuff was a lot of the grunt work, making copies, answering phones, getting photos lined up, things like that, and there weren't a lot of opportunities to write. I think anybody, especially people starting out these days, would tell you right away you need to be somewhere where you can write a lot. It's the same way in your side of the industry, is that if you want to be on the air, you need to be getting that experience, right? Not sort
right.
of only working behind the scenes. But I made the decision to stick with it, and I'm incredibly thankful I did, because even though it was a little bit of the long way to get to where I wanted to go, I think it was the best, because what I learned at the place that I think had one of the all-time great sports sections for daily newspapers, the LA Times of the 80s and the 90s, was, when you look at the staff and the people who put out that operation, it's, they're world beaters. And so just to be in that atmosphere, to be learning from them every day, I got a better education in journalism without majoring in journalism than I think anybody at any college, just because you're in that setting 40, 50, 60 hours a week.
Timing is everything. And then being
ready
for the opportunity.
Yeah, I'm certainly evidence of that.
You know, covering the NBA, 19 years in Los Angeles, you know, when I look at it in the 80s, I mean, that was unbelievable. You know, Magic Johnson and, you know, pushing Kareem and Showtime and Pat Riley and Michael Cooper and, the 80s had to be something, Fabulous Forum, Manchester and Prairie. Take us through that. I mean, the first year covering those guys, I mean, that had to be something.
It was, I think Showtime is probably one of the all-time perfect names because that's exactly what it was, that atmosphere that you mentioned. I did not cover the Lakers on a regular basis until it got the Showtime years. I was doing the Clippers for a lot of years, but I was certainly around the Forum. And then when I started on the Lakers, you know, you're at the Forum 150 nights a year, so you certainly get that energy and the feel of that, and the whole Hollywood thing, and just obviously the players. You can't. To put those players on a list, it's pretty mind-boggling to think of all the talent that went through there. Was amazing.
Well, and not only that, when you started covering it, that's when, you know, Pat Riley started to come in to his own in coaching, came down working with Chick Hearn, replaced Westhead, and boy, that team started to really take a life ball on its own. And, you know, the battle in the Celtics and Sixers. And, you know, when you look at that, year, and even before that, when Bird and Magic came into the NBA, we put aside the 11:30 p.m. Games on Channel 2, tape delays.
Right.
And that's when I think
right.
the NBA really took a life ball on its own.
Well, it's amazing to think back that, still in our lifetime, that there are a lot of people who can remember when the NBA Finals was on tape delay.
Yeah.
And that tells you how far things have come. And that tells you as great the players as Magic and Bird and a few years after that, obviously Michael Jordan, were, it's nothing compared to their impact on the sport. They're the ones that turned it into not only a national success, but a worldwide corporation. Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, you cannot give them enough credit. And Julius Irving. And as I said, a few years later, as you got into the mid 80s, Michael Jordan, they're the ones that sort of put the booster rockets on this league and sent it into a completely different realm that anybody in the mid-70s, the late-70s could have imagined.
Right. And when you look at it, Dr. J, the ABA came into existence. They took Denver, they took San Antonio, Indiana, and the New Jersey Nets were pretty much involved in this thing. When you looked at that ABA merger, Scott, I was surprised that the Kentucky Colonels, a great franchise like that, wasn't brought into the NBA. And I'm still surprised to this day, fast forward it years later, that we don't have a team in Kentucky. Any thoughts to that?
Well, it's amazing when you think of places that are connected to hoops. Kentucky certainly comes to mind. Now, there may have been some decisions that there's a difference between college passion and NBA passion. That certainly those are the decisions left to the business people that have to look at things like market size, advertising opportunities, obviously population, TV market size, different things like that. But I do know that Louisville has been sort of in the conversation for a long time when people talk about next in as far as possible expansion cities. I don't think that Louisville has ever been, okay, they're first in line. And right now, as we talk about it, it's Seattle and it's Vegas. But Kentucky, I think, has always sort of been that, yeah, I can see the interest in Louisville, and Louisville has had some interest in turn. So never say never. I would say it's a little bit unlikely. But as you said, that it's obviously a hoops heaven there, right?
Well, yeah, and you look at it, when Irving came in, traded to Philly, the big deal there, and then watching the wars from afar, Boston and Philly, who was going to play the Lakers, and, you know, it was so fun to see those teams coming into the Forum and stuff. You'd see them once a year, but, boy, you mark the calendar when those two teams are coming in and you are keeping your fingers crossed you can actually get into the joint. And any thought to that, you're sitting there covering these guys, and you've got, you know, Irving and Mo Cheeks and, you know, Andrew Toney and on one side, and then you got on the other side coming in a couple months later, Larry Bird and Robert Parrish and Kevin McHale. So, I mean, you had a front row seat for that, and all these other guys sitting out there trying to pay thousands just to get into the place to watch a classic.
And they were real confrontations. People who were around then, and I think even now, people kind of realize the difference in the style of play, that things were much more physical back then. So especially once you got into the playoffs, and it's the Lakers and the Celtics or the Lakers and the Sixers, and you're in each other's face for five or six or seven games in a row. Kurt Rambis gets taken down with the clothesline. Kareem gets into it. Danny Ainge gets into it. Kevin McHale gets into it. It was very physical, and it was very heated. And now you can say that these are great rivalries that are going on, but there was always something special about that East Coast-West Coast thing. I think that added to it. And especially when you had an electric player like Julius Irving, and you had the contrasts of Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, and you had the traditions of Lakers versus Celtics. It was an incredible, it was electric when you talk about those teams meeting in the finals. And so therefore, even as you mentioned, the one game that maybe one of those teams would come into the Forum, or when if the Lakers going back to Boston or to Philly, back in the Boston Garden, you know, being held together with tape and bubble gum. It was an amazing atmosphere. Just the Chicago Stadium, same thing. Later years, when they would play games in Chicago Stadium, when the Bulls got championship good, it was the same thing. It was just bedlam. The noise in that place, it's the last place you wanted to be when there was a fire, because it had those narrow hallways and a lot of staircases.
Yep.
And oh my gosh, lots of trouble if something goes wrong. But you get a basketball game. I was at Chicago Stadium for hockey, and it was the same way. It's like a slow cooker that somebody, it's like somebody put a lid on top of the building and flipped the switch, and things got hot and things got loud, and it was amazing.
Yeah, it definitely was, and I remember them obstructed view seats in the Boston Garden, too, for a hockey game when I was there. It's just simply amazing. That led into the 90s, and it leads us to the Chicago Bulls and Steve Kerr. Man, oh, man, the nice run he had with the Bulls, five titles there, four as a coach with the Warriors. And, you know, it's amazing what this guy's done. And it's amazing what those Chicago Bulls teams had done, even with Michael Jordan taking hiatus and going to play with the Birmingham Barons baseball.
When they had a lot more success than people would have imagined. Not championship level, but they were good that 1 year, and I think surpassed expectations. And Phil Jackson had sort of privately said that that first year when Michael retired just before training camp and nobody really had a chance to prepare for what how the Bulls can respond to this and how can they recover from losing the greatest player just before the start of training camp, Phil was the one that remained sort of confident, sort of upbeat, and he wrote down a number on a piece of paper and said, here's how many we're going to win, and we're still going to be good. Again, he didn't predict title, but he said we're not going away. And guys like Steve Kerr and some of the others got a lot more experience, not just playing, but playing at the forefront, taking more of a lead role. And so then when the world changed again and Michael returned to the Bulls, Chicago was a lot better because of it. And there were a lot of people individually who capitalized on Michael's retirement and then Michael's return. But the case can be made that nobody benefited more than Steve Kerr. I lay all this out in the book, Steve Kerr Alike, that when you talk about all his fascinating moments, he was about to retire that summer.
Yeah.
He was a free agent. He was a free agent, and nobody wanted him. When he signed with the Bulls, it was in late September. How crazy is that? Free agency begins in July. He's sitting on his hands all summer long. There's a couple conversations, but nobody's made an offer to him. And he's telling people, I may have to retire. And instead, he ends up getting that the lifeline from the Bulls, and the crazy then Michael quits, and so Steve gets a bigger opportunity than anyone imagined and has proven himself that he can handle this role, so that when Michael returns, Steve is one of the primary backups and becomes incredibly valuable off the bench.
Yeah, and you know, when you look at him, you know, Kerr, it would be when he got into the coaching ranks. And you remember, he was the general manager after his playing days, went to Phoenix, and then he had a choice. And the choice was take the New York Knicks job or take the Golden State Warriors job, because Mark Jackson was let go. And he took the Golden State Warriors job, and boy, did that turn into a blessing in more ways than one. They have built a dynasty there, 4 titles in 8 years. People say the NBA's changed today, Scott, in a lot of ways. No defense, this and that. You know, it could be the players, you know, they try to compare the players to, you know, yesteryear. But I will tell you this, you know, when I look at the NBA growing up, yeah, the Boston Celtics, yeah, the Philadelphia 76ers, yeah, the Lakers, if Portland with Bill Walton was healthy, who knows if they would have won more. You know, you look at the Bulls, you look at the Rockets. But if you're going to take anybody out of this new millennium, the Spurs got to be in there, the Heat with what LeBron did with Bosch and Wade down there, and look at what Steve Kerr has done. This had to be his best coaching in the four titles in Golden State, wouldn't you say?
Well, it certainly was the most unique of the circumstances, and therefore that says a lot about his coaching in the moment, but also his coaching long term, because what happened this year was a lot about what he had put in place many years ago and the consistent message. And even when they had the great roster turnover and went into the tank, when they Kevin Durant left as a free agent and Klay Thompson got hurt again. And so they obviously have a much different look and things went really bad. But the approach from Steve and the system he had in place was always the same. So I think you make a great point that there's a lot to be said for his coaching. And I think that certainly this is one of the most sad of all of them that he's won as a player and as a coach. This has got to be one of the most satisfying, because all Steve wanted in the last couple of years, when they had the loss after loss after loss, his thing was just give us a chance. We want a final chance. We want our fate to be decided on the court, not in the trainer's room. Just give me one season with Klay Thompson healthy and Steph Curry and Draymond Green as the core, And if we lose, we lose. But we just don't want to lose because of Klay Thompson's health. And so, therefore, he got the opportunity he wanted, and they took advantage of it. And I think that that is why it's so satisfying.
Yeah, and not only that, you know, it's funny that the owners of the Warriors, they're two Boston guys, end up beating Boston for the title this year. That was simply amazing. But, yeah, I looked at that Warrior team, and everybody was talking Phoenix and everything, and, you know, during the year, and we heard some other teams, and boy, they just busted the process, bought into the system. And when you look at, you know, Curry and Green and Thompson and all these guys he surrounded themselves with, they knew they can do it, and they did it. And that's simply amazing. I want to talk about how you came about with him to do this book, The Life of Steve Kerr. Boy, it's really impressive, and I want to get some listeners out there, and we'll talk about where they can get this book too.
Well, this was my project, not Steve's. This is not his memoir. This is not an autobiography. This is me writing about him, talking to more than 100 people from every point in his life. Obviously, a lot of basketball involved, so I'm talking to tons of NBA people and people who knew him from his college days. But also the personal side, because I'll tell you how I pitched it to the publisher when we first sold it a few years ago, was that this is the story of a guy with a unique career, and that's the one that we've just sort of outlined a little bit ago about the Bulls thing. The story of a guy with a unique career but a fascinating life, that there's never been anything like it. So he was born in the Middle East. He spent a lot of time through the years there, had the family had their permanent home in Southern California, and Steve ended up coming back home after playing some in the Middle East, ended up coming back home, and as a high school senior just outside of Los Angeles, he's nowhere on the recruiting radar. He's getting a little bit of interest. He's getting a couple visits, but zero offers. This guy who ends up playing 15 years in the NBA couldn't beg his way into a scholarship until it's the summer he had graduated high school, the summer after high school graduation, where Lute Olson happens to see him by accident at a tournament at Cal State Long Beach. Lute shows up to look at other players and kind of says, well, he'd just taken over at Arizona. He had a crummy team there in Tucson. And he said, I just need one more guy to fill out my roster. And ends up taking Steve. And Steve goes there knowing he has no business playing in the Pac-10 at the time, the Pac-10. And instead ends up blowing up. Turns into one of the best players in the country. Arizona reaches the championship game. And Steve then says, God, if everything breaks right, maybe I'll get a year or two in the NBA. And so it's really the story of a guy who at every step of the way has sort of been this long shot and has turned horrible things into good things. He blew out his knee and was when he was playing for Team USA in the World Championships the summer before what would have been his senior year at Arizona. The team doctor says your career is probably over. You're never going to play again. That ends up being one of the best things to happen to Steve because he redshirts, comes back even better, and then ends up on that Arizona team with Sean Elliott that makes that run to the title game. He gets in a fight with Michael Jordan, gets clocked, big black eye. Ends up being one of the best things to ever happen to him because Michael gained a great deal of respect for Steve from that Steve stood up to Michael Jordan. And that doesn't happen very often. And so at that point, Michael says, all right, you're one of my guys. And talk about invaluable. To be able to have that on your resume is key. So it's really been a life of overcoming long odds, of bad things turning into good. It's a fascinating story.
Yeah, as we wind down the last 5 minutes of this great interview, and, man, we got to do this again, man. I really cherish this. You know, the only thing I can think of is if you're going to throw a slogan out there is he was dedicated to a dream and he bet on himself.
Oh, that's great. No, that I think that sums it up really well. He stuck with it. There's a lot of perseverance. He's a great guy, and he has this kind of always had this kind of boyish approach about him. They used to, when he was younger, they would call him Opie and all this other stuff. And you know, even now as an adult, he loves to wear around Vans and shorts, and he's just completely casual. But there's an immense level of fight, as the Michael Jordan showdown sort of indicated. He's a fighter, and as much as he's a good guy, he's got just the right of SOB in him that helped make him a success.
Definitely. And as we wind this thing down, you've covered the NBA for a long time, even up there in Sacramento and stuff like that, and down here in Los Angeles. What is your Mount Rushmore? If I had to put you on the spot, give me three things that stood out as far as, wow, this is great, man. This is a bucket list memory. Is there three things that stuck out? And you can probably sum it up in a couple minutes if you want.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is putting me on the spot. let me think. Greatest moments being around the game, because I would surprise you and pick some things that had nothing to do that were not on the court, or are you looking more basketball moments?
Well, you can look at basketball moments. I mean, the Memorial Day Massacre. I remember the Lakers and Celtics with the no air condition there. I mean, you can go any which way.
Yeah. How about Michael Jordan in the finals against the Trailblazers, three-pointer after three-pointer after three-pointer, until he finally sort of looks over and gives a shrug like, you know, what are you going to do? that's a tough one to beat. So many of the Lakers-Celtics finals, we talked about that a lot at the beginning, but again, just for the atmosphere, you mentioned a minute ago with the air conditioning, but just for the atmosphere alone and the rivalry, and everybody seems to get more excited for Lakers and Celtics. Kings and Lakers in the 2002 Western Conference Finals was complete insanity. Insane. Because of the games, because of the things that happened, because it carried over until the next year. The 2002 West Finals carried over until the next season. Remember this? Rick Fox and Doug Christie getting in a fight in the tunnel at Staples Center the next season. There was still so much bad blood between those teams. Those are a few that jump out, but I also think of the people that I've met and the experience I've had, and some of the stuff that jumps out are off the court as well, that are not those sort of highlight moments, but are some of the best experiences I've ever had, because I was the unique settings and these experiences that I got to have, that you think, wow, this is, you can't pay for this.
Yeah. Last question. And I'm very surprised that nobody's duplicated this. Are you surprised that nobody's duplicated all these years later Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's skyhook?
Well, the game has changed so much. You know, now whenever you think so much about when teams are looking at the bigs, it's, you know, all right, but can they hit from 22 feet? It's not can they score from in the lane. The game has changed so much, and I don't think enough credit is given to Kareem for being such a special player in that regard. I think we all know he was a special player.
Yeah.
But he was so gifted athletically that he paid so much attention to taking care of his body that he remained limber even very late in his career. When he was clearly slowing down, he could still score on people like that because of the sky hook. And it takes a lot of being fluid. It takes a lot of being flexible and coordinated at that size. And there's just not that many guys through history, not even in the last 20 years, but ever, who have been as coordinated as Kareem at 7 foot.
Yeah, that you hit it right there. Same, I got the same views on that. As we close this thing out, Scott, let everybody know how they can get your books and how they can you know, purchase that, because, boy, I'll tell you, this, we got to get you around the realm here in this cities of, you know, the media of these shows, man. This is great. I can talk hours for you with you.
Me too. Me too. This has been a blast. But if anybody wants to check out Steve Kerr Alife, it's available at the major internet sites. Depending on what city you're in, it might be in your major bookstores. It's in some cities. I don't know exactly where now, but I know it's been in the big cities in the past. Independent bookstores, terrific as always. Shout out. Can't say enough positives about independent bookstores. But if worse comes to worse, if you cannot find it in person, it's 100% available at the major online stores.
Yeah, I appreciate this tremendously. We'll talk again next week. I'll get you the transcript of this show here momentarily. And, man, oh, man, unbelievable interview. Guys, thanks for tuning in. For Scott Howard Cooper, yours truly, Mark Mancini, saying you're listening to the Breaking It Down podcast. Catch it on the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to the podcast, powered now by Mancini Media. Till then, have a blessed one, guys. Tuning in.